calling in. We are going to open the work session on House Bill 5018. And
do we have a quorum at least close?
Yes, we do. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, I've distributed for you a memo and also I'm not sure what to call it. It's a calculation. It's a second sheet behind the memo that I provided for you on House Bill 5018, the full-time appropriations. And what the memo tells you, it summarizes what's in the governor's original budget and what's in reflected in House Bill 5018, and that would be current service level amount of $4.378 billion and the appropriation of $100 million in general fund to the governor's school improvement fund. What the memo further shows you is the changes that need to be made to the bill in order to achieve what's in the legislative budget for the state school fund. And before we get into those detailed recommendations, what I'd like you to do is simply turn to that second sheet that's titled the state school fund. And I'll just briefly go over that for you because I'm sure all of you have heard this number, $4.811 billion. And this sheet will show you how that number is achieved. The numbers are in millions, and it starts with the combination of general fund and lottery funds, $4,561,500,000. To that is added lottery bonds for state education projects, and those state education projects are described in House Bill 2566, which currently is being heard in the House Revenue Committee and probably will not be finished today. I think they're anticipated going up into Monday working that bill.
I'm sure.
Sure.
I understand that this will not be a part of the number that rolls over as part of the formula, but is it going to be allocated on the basis of the formula?
Madam Chair and Senator, so I'm not sure at this point because that bill is in the committee being worked. My understanding is that it's going to be on something like an ADN budget. That it's true that it does not go through the formula.
But is it allocated or based on the same thing or not?
Madam Chair and Senator, so I'm not sure.
Thank you.
The next item you'll see there is an increase of the distribution from the Common School Fund, and that would add $40 million to this amount for schools. The next item is Senate Bill 622 proceeds, and that would add $50 million. And I've also distributed for you a chart from our office that shows you how those funds are distributed in detail. Not all of the funds go directly to the schools. Some are retained by the Department of Education and by the Department of Administrative Services. That's $10 or $11 million to purchase things on behalf of schools. The next item after that is an anticipated increase in the local revenues, and that would add $38.5 million. And this increase actually occurred, the projection of this increase actually occurred fairly early on in the session, but instead of using this to supplant some of the general funds, it was just added on top of the general fund, so it's considered an increase to get to the 4811. Finally, the three remaining amounts you see there are grants that would come out of, again, House Bill 2566, and the criteria for those grants are set in House Bill 2566, which, again, is not in its final form. The grants would provide $10 million for high-growth districts, $7 million for small high schools. I think actually that should say small remote high school. I apologize for that. And then $4 million for urban enhancement. So that brings you to the $4,811 million that I'm sure you've heard discussed around the building. In order to achieve that, it, through House Bill 5018, because again, some will be in House Bill 2566, the Common School Fund actually won't be reflected in either of those bills. And then there's some of this in Senate Bill 622 and some remaining at the local level. But in order to make sure that everything works out to get to that $4.811 billion, there are changes that are needed to House Bill 5018. So what I've provided for you in the memo are my recommendations in changing the original bill to achieve those numbers. And I'll just briefly go through the recommendations. In the bill, both the general fund and the lottery fund are split out by fiscal year. And so these first two sections cover the general fund appropriation, the first section for 1999-2000, and then the second section for 2001. So I'm recommending that you change those numbers to the ones that I've recommended here, and that would be a total of $4,265,537,291 general fund.
Did you say that again?
4,265,537,291. And I should also mention that we may need to later revise the allocation between general fund and lottery fund.
Madam Chair, this is the money then that will go through the formula. Is that it?
Senator, so yes, that money will be going through the formula.
So it's a little less than 4.3 going through the formula.
Not including the general fund. You add the general fund to that, then you get to the $4,561,500,000.
Isn't this general fund?
That's the general fund portion. And then I'll give you the lottery fund portion.
Okay, thank you.
Then I'm recommending that you delete Section 3, which is the $100 million appropriation for the school improvement fund. And in Sections 4 and 5, that covers the annual limitation for the lottery fund. And by changing those two sections, you would come up with a total of $295,962,709 in lottery funds.
And that's added to the other.
Senator, so yes, that's added to the other. So if you add those two, if you add the four amounts in sections 1, 2, 4, and 5, as I'm recommending, then you will get to the $4,561,500,000. That goes to the four. And if we move on to sections 6 and 7, these are the sections that establish the caps. These caps were first put into place in this biennium, and it caps the amount of funds going to the schools when the distributions from the state school fund in grants, transfers, and distributions when combined with local resources exceed certain caps. And what I'm recommending is that you revise those numbers based on the revisions in the previous section. And also with what I've worked out with the Legislative Revenue Office as to what should be in and what should be out the cap. And I'll briefly go over that for you. First of all the general fund and the lottery fund is under the cap. The distribution from the Common School Fund is under the cap. And then the local resources, except for the following, are under the cap. There are amounts for Portland FERS costs and desegregation costs. And there are some equalization funds flowing to Grant and Wallala counties. Those amounts are not under the cap.
Could you say that last one?
Equalization funds for Grant and Wallala counties.
Okay.
coming with the corporation to approve the collective bargaining?
Senator Durfer, do you mean in the general fund and lottery fund amount? I'm sorry, I don't have that specific amount. I can see if I can get it for you, what their cost.
I very well, that's kind of something that's told me in the office.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon,
I see Jim Scherzinger here. If the question is about Portland Purvis, you may be able to answer that question.
How much the amount is?
Yes, I believe that's what Senator Gordon is.
Scherzinger, can you answer that question?
Jim Scherzinger, Portland Public Schools. I'm sorry, I just walked in and I didn't hear the question.
The question, Jim, was that in the budget, you mentioned that there's an appropriation for to cover the PERS shortfall that you've had in Portland. Do you know how much that is?
No, that's not a, I don't think that's a correct, it's not an appropriation. It's really more of a, well, I'll just tell you what the situation is. Back when Portland School District entered the PERS system, they had an unfunded liability in their pension system. And they had to issue bonds, or they didn't have to, they chose to issue bonds to fund that unfunded liability. And they are paying the debt service on those bonds. Under Measure 50, those bonds are gap bonds. And so they're, it's like a 57-cent rate that's paid by local taxpayers. The money is set aside in a bond fund, just like any other bond fund, and used to repay that debt. The district also has a permanent tax rate under Measure 50 of 477, which is actually higher than most school districts. And that money, in its effect, goes into the state school funds, into the pool, like all other permanent rate school property taxes. And all they're doing in this chart is showing that when they make their estimate of property taxes, that they're pulling out the property taxes that Portland collects to repay its PERS bond to get to the permanent rate total that goes into the state school fund. But that, those taxes are, those, it's not paid by the state, it's fully paid by local taxpayers. If I had my brothers, they wouldn't show it that way. That's just the way they calculate it, and they're showing it the way they calculate it. But those taxes are paid by local taxpayers.
Right. The rest of the state doesn't pick it up.
The rest of the state does not pick it up. In fact, our permanent rate is higher than most school districts. It's the second highest in Multnomah County. So we're contributing our fair share to the pool. From that standpoint.
Okay, to continue then, if there are no more questions about the cap, in Section 8, I'm recommending that you retain the original language, and that simply provides that any excess over the cap that is determined any excess determined to be over the cap shall be transferred to the lottery bond fund for the purposes of paying principal and interest on any outstanding lottery bonds. And then in Section 9, you've got a blank, and what I'm recommending is that you insert in that blank $3,424,500,000.
$3,424,500,000.
And that's simply an amount, as the section states, that's considered to be tax relief for the purposes of ORS 291-365. For sections 10, 11, 12, and 13, I'm recommending that you retain the original language. The And then I'm also recommending that you insert new language that provides for expenditure limitation of $100 million for distributing the proceeds from the lottery bond revenues to schools. And again, the use of the proceeds is defined in House Bill 2566, and these proceeds would be distributed to both school districts and the Youth Corrections Education Program.
Thank you. Would you, if I hadn't been on the committee, probably everyone else would. How could those funds be used, $100 million we're talking about? What can they be used for? Can they be used for operating expenses? Is it just for capital investment?
Madam Chair and Senator Durfler, as I understand it, currently those proceeds are to be used for state or described as state education project, and that term is defined in House Bill 2566. I've got some proposed amendments to it, but again, I'd like to emphasize that that bill has not been finalized, so this could change. So bear with me for a moment while I find that section. I can give you an idea. It would include projects for instructional training and the acquisition, construction, improvement, remodeling, maintenance, or repair of public school facilities in the state of Oregon, including but not limited to land, site preparation costs, permanent or portable buildings and equipment, telecommunications equipment, computer software and related technology, textbooks, library books, furniture and furnishings, vehicles, cost of planning for bond issues and capital improvements, payment of debt service and obligations other than general obligation bonds issued for such projects.
Is it the discretion of the school board, each individual school, and how that money is going to be spent?
Madam Chair and Senator Durfler, I'm not sure what provisions there are for determining exactly
how. And how long are the 15-year bonds?
That I don't know either. I'm sorry. I assume they are 15-year bonds, just like the $150 million issue.
It does bother me a lot to see it spending dollars over a 15-year period that for buying computers and books and so on that are going to be good for 3 to 5 to 6 years.
I'm Senator Dripper. I'm sorry. I'd like to correct myself. I do know they are 15-year bonds.
Yeah, 15-year bonds. Well, like I said, I think it just... I just think that's not a prudent decision to make for using it for equipment and products that are good for just a short period of time. That's just a comment, I guess.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordon?
Thank you. Clarification. The proceeds from the lottery revenue bond to under House Bill 2566, the proceeds just go to the high-growth districts, the small remote high schools, and for urban enhancement, or is there some other criteria in the bill?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, bear with me while I turn to that section.
Certainly.
And I'd still like it to emphasize that the proposed amendment subject to change, that bill is being heard and I believe worked right now in the House Revenue Committee.
Thank you.
And they probably will not be done today and we'll carry it over to Monday. And now that I said that, could you repeat your question?
Are the proceeds from the lottery revenue bond under House Bill 2566 targeted just to the high growth district, small remote high school, and further urban enhancement?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I don't believe so. It looks like these grants are distributed on an ABMW basis so that each school would get some of the funds.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I understand that should Senate Bill 622 not make it through the process, that there would be an additional $50 million of bonding put in to make up for that difference. Is that your understanding?
Madam Chair Chair and Senator Trill, I've heard that there have been discussions to that effect. There is no provision right now in this bill, should Senate Bill 622 not pass, or should it change in terms of the monies that would be available for schools. I would like to point out that we do additional bonding. There is not right now in the overall state budget any provision for debt service on this additional bond.
So 22 doesn't make it, there might well just be $50 million left, but certainly in this building.
That brings us to the Senate Bill 622, and what I'm recommending there is that you add a new section to provide limitations for distribution of those proceeds. And then finally, I'm recommending that you add a couple of new sections wherein the legislative revenue officer is required to certify the excess funds over the legislatively adopted cap.
Okay, discussion?
Senator
Clarkson. So what does certification mean?
It's... take a few minutes to find that section. What we've come up with for draft language is that the legislative revenue officer would certify first in May of each year, he would certify an initial estimate of the amount that anticipated to be transferred to the lottery bond fund due to the cap. So that would just give us a date that we could look to in order to plan in budgetary purposes. And then in the following year, once all the audited financial data is in the school district, he would certify any amount at the final amount. And then he would also be certifying the new anticipated amount. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Oh, you probably like that. I'd like to just step back for a minute on this whole process. You know, we've got the biggest state budget in front of us today. We've been seeing various changes of when this is going to be on the calendar. Quite frankly, we didn't get it posted until yesterday. I know leadership has indicated that there would be a public hearing on this, or at least some public input. The room isn't full of people who came in before. I think anybody who had been serving on this committee earlier at least had heard numerous hours of testimony on the importance of K-12 to their district. I actually had copies of the the sign-up sheets here, and this is just a sample. And I think we're really making a mockery of something that's the most important thing in my mind we're doing in this building, and that is to rush through a K-12 budget. It doesn't make any sense. We're spending, under this scenario, $4.81 billion, the largest piece of the state budget, and we don't have, I hope we can at least have some testimony, and I would encourage this committee to actually hold back and allow some public testimony and allow appropriate hearing, because we cannot, this is what drives the cynicism in the public, by ramrodding something like this through today. And clearly, we've never had a discussion about what the number means to specific districts. When they came in first and foremost, both districts, parents, business people, all talk about the need. But now today, we're discussing how we're going to take $4.8 billion or $4.81 billion and basically run that through. We don't know how the formula is going to work. I guess to me, this is what drives, again, the cynicism about our process, and I'm really troubled by where we're at right now with this. You know, I guess maybe I personally had a lot at stake at making sure that we had a very serious debate about what that level should be, and then it comes down to an afternoon on a Saturday in which we're going to just push this out, and it just, to me, is appalling. So I would hope and ask that we at least take some time on this, to give some time today, post it up again, perhaps get somebody on Monday I mean, we were asking folks on a weekend to be here. That's a little unheard of. So I would request that we could pull back and give just the due process it needs.
Representative Edwards, we have gotten this process. We've been working on K-12 funding since we got here in January. And I don't think this is a ramrod job. And we are going to proceed today. We'll discuss it. End of discussion.
Madam Chair. Is it possible that we could at least have Portland Public Schools here? I've distributed something that at least they've done an analysis on what 4811 does to my district, Portland Public Schools. At least we could have something on the record about one school district, and maybe if we could get Ozzie Rose in here to give us a better overview of his take from hearing from districts, that at least the numbers are floating out there a little bit. It only was once at least put out about a week ago, so I'm suggesting that we at least have public input on this important bill, at least a minimal amount. Ozzie's in the building. He just got a revenue. But we have Jim Sersinger here, and I'd urge that we at least allow Jim to start out and try to get some others to come in.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Just to support what Representative Edwards is saying, I think there's another piece of information that should be provided to us in our deliberations this afternoon, however long we decide to continue meeting. And because we have at least a couple of people here who've been serving on the negotiating team, if we could hear, if I could hear, how or if the 4.811 number has been discussed in negotiations tied to the impact that would have on individual districts around the state. It would help me to understand what the negotiating team understands about that impact around the state. Because the chair is correct, we have had the bill before, we've had a lot of testimony. But at the time we had that testimony, we weren't talking about 4.811 and what that impact would be on our various districts. So if the chair would allow for the testimony that Representative Edwards is requesting, I would also ask that added to that be some comments from those who are serving on the negotiating team about the impact of 4.811 on
Madam Chair.
Representative.
And also, I would like to move a -2 amendment to this bill at this time, and I have it here, which I think fits right nicely with this discussion about the difference between a 4811 and a 4.95 appropriation to this bill. It's right here. And if you'll indulge, at least allow Jim Sersinger from Portland Public Schools to go over one piece of information.
Why don't we deal with the amendment?
Okay.
Let's do that with this piece of business.
Okay.
I guess we've got to wait for another member. Mr. Sersinger, if you want to just give some brief comments.
Jim Sersinger, Portland Public Schools. I'm sensitive to the time demands on the committee and to the needs of my own members, so I'll try to be clear yet brief. As Representative Edwards has said, he distributed a three-page memo that the district did on the 4811 package. Let me just quickly go through that. The first page is a cover page that simply says that we have adopted a budget for next year. That adopted budget reflected a $5 million reduction from a current service level. There was about a 30-position teacher reduction in there, some of it from enrollment reduction, but some of it from selected cuts. There was about a 100 positions reduction in the budget, mostly in maintenance. under the 4811 package, which the second page describes, and I think your staff has already done a good job of describing, so I'll skip that over. It shows the assumptions that we made. Now, I do believe the package is slightly different now in the growth grants than what I analyzed, but the numbers are still roughly correct. And then the third page, the last page, shows the effect on the district. And it's based on a LRO run 41. I know that there are new runs out now. I've seen many of them, and I think these numbers would still be accurate within $500,000, even looking at those new runs. And it simply shows that the package as we understood it would require about a $6.8 million reduction from the adopted budget that we have. And for the biennium, that's about a $14 million reduction from that level of budget. That $14 million is one that people have lit upon and said that, well, you can cover that with a local option levy election. And the difficulty there that one should understand is that the local option, first of all, is not available in the first year. It's too late for that. So that if one wanted to try a local option, there are really two difficulties with it. Number one, you'd have to somehow advance money from the second year to the first, in this case $7 million to balance the budget for this year, and then go out for a local option of 14. Well, that's an extreme risk. It would be very risky in our budget to do that, especially considering that the local option in the second year, if it's granted by the legislature, would have to be a double majority election. You'd have to get a 50% turnout. The first opportunity for any election without a double majority is the general election in 2000, which would be too late for even the second year of the next biennium. So you'd have to go out for a local option levy, and you'd be taking a big risk. In Portland, I think the primary last year, the turnout was 35%. So getting a 50% would be very tough. And quite frankly, it would be too much of a risk to risk a cut of $14 million out of that budget in 1 year. And so there could be some amount of that done, but to do $7 million and then risk a 14 cut in the second year if the voters wouldn't approve, or at least you wouldn't get a 50% turnout, is too big a risk. And I cannot see the board taking that kind of risk. And I certainly wouldn't recommend it to them. But that's the situation that we're in with this package.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Jim, in looking at the budget and where we came in at the current service level and looking at what the governor's recommendation was when we first started this discussion, and that level was 4.378, and I believe the governor came in at 4.55, and given a 2% annual inflation and minimum enrollment growth of 0.07. What was Portland's assumption based on those figures that were proposed originally by the governor?
What was our situation?
Mm-hmm.
Under that, it was a much bigger shortfall. I don't remember the exact number. The reason is we have a substantial amount of temporary funding, both from local and state sources, in the last budget. Many districts had that because the governor's original current service level assumed that all the lottery bond funding was temporary funding, and most districts used it in their general fund. They had those kinds of expenditures in their general fund, and they used it for that. So there was an immediate shortfall created in many districts directly from that calculation. And so you kind of had that method of calculation created a problem to begin with. I can't remember the exact shortfall number we came up with under the 4725 or even the earlier governor's proposed budget.
I guess it would help because we've moved from a 4378 to a 4811, which my calculation says $433 million increase in dollars, and yet I still hear I guess I get bothered when I still hear the word cut, because if you prepared your budget based on the other figure, that 4333 would not be a cut figure. I guess
it would be a bigger cut from the prior year. I'm just describing the situation in our budget compared to the prior year. Once you adjust for the loss of temporary funding, the increased PERS cost, and the fact that we moved as well, you end up with a situation at the 495 level that our budget's up about 2%. And this is going to mean that it's down at this level from the prior year. So I'm working from the prior year as opposed to some level that the governor had originally proposed versus what it is now. It would have been a bigger drop from the prior year to go with the governor's original level.
What is your PERS cost?
The increase in the PERS cost is about $5 million from the PERS rate increase. The total level is about $20 million, if I remember. Our total contribution to PERS, I believe in our budget, was about, in the general funds, about $20 million. And we do not pay the 6%. We still have our employees contributing their 6%. So that's just the rate without us picking up their 6%.
Jim, could you explain on page 2 of the handout where you have current service cuts and adopted budget level $10 million? I understand the first two, which would be the, as I, let me just verify if I'm right, if the 4811 level, you would be down about $14 million over the bank, and then the minus 10 current services
right.
Adopted budget level, what is that about?
What I'm saying is that when we adopted our budget, we had about a $10 million biennial or $5 million annual reduction from current service level. Most of those cuts were in the maintenance side of the budget. There were some teacher reductions, but there were some information system reductions.
Thank you. That's what I had understood, because at the time that your school district adopted your budget, they identified what they were cutting, and I had an opportunity at that time to have you have a briefing, and that's what that was about.
That's right.
And this additional $14 million would be an additional cut on top of that.
Right, and we're kind of shifting from annual to biannual, but yes.
Jim, could you tell me, it's a little easier for me to understand. Are you getting less dollars per student under this budget than you got last budget?
Under this budget rather than last budget. Not from the state. Not from the state. It's just that...
So you're getting, how much more per student are you getting in this budget than you got in the previous budget?
From the state, I don't even have to look at the run. The primary problem that was, remember, we had a business income tax that was a one-year tax, and that's gone away. And so we also had donations from the city and the county, and most of that has gone away. We also had lottery bond funding, which now would be smaller. So then if you go back, because some of this is making up for some of that, and that's why you'd have per student funding growing. Now, if I look at the run, I don't have the latest run that this is based on, but the one that I do have is a little misleading because it has the U.S. West money tied into the formula, which it's really not. If I can adjust that out, in that run, we were up on a per student amount through the formula, 384. If you pulled out the... You have to pull about 80 out of that for taking U.S. West out of the formula. It's more like 300.
You're talking about the $50 million that's in the 622 U.S. West Fund.
Right. When they the run that I had that I was working on.
Pull that out.
Well, because it's not run through the, you asked the question, how much more are we getting per student through the formula? Okay. And
let me say it another way. How many more dollars are you going to get from per student from the state over 11?
I haven't worked it, because then you have to add in the lottery bond funding last time versus the lottery bond.
Is this substantial?
It would be an increase, you know, a couple hundred dollars a student. But we're losing all that temporary funding out the other side.
I understood that when I looked at the runs, that the average was like $350 at 4.7. So if we go to 4.8, it would be more than. So are you getting less than state average per student then?
All I'm doing is looking at the run that I do have, and it was up with the U.S. West money in it. We were up $384 per student through the formula.
And was that at the 7.25, or is that, was that the 4.81?
This was this is the package prior to the one where now you've changed the growth plan.
That was at 4.7225.
No, it was at 4.811.
It's 4.811.
4.811. It's run 41. If you pulled U.S. West out, we'd be up $300 per student. But then we're down about 100 and we got 244 students under the lottery bonds in 98-99. In the first year here, we would get 80. So we're down about 100 and whatever that difference is.
But the state would be giving you $380 more per student.
$300 through the formula. Because U.S. West doesn't go through the formula.
Okay.
Yeah. I know it's very confusing because you've got pluses and minuses all over the place. And what's going on here is you're substituting money through the formula for other kinds of funding.
But my concern, I think most parents' larger concern would be per student spending.
Right.
Does what from last biennial in this biennial, including what?
Well, our total budget, our total general fund adjusted for the per shift, which if you didn't adjust for that, we'd actually be down. But our total budget at the 4.95 level is up about 2% on an equivalent basis. So our student count's down about 0.5%, so we'd be up 2.5% in total spending.
In what, at what budget?
At the 4.95.
Okay. No, I'm asking you at.
And I have to sit down and work out the numbers. And I haven't done that.
But
I'm getting to the limits of my ability to figure it out in my head.
Okay, so but you're saying at the 4.95 level,
right,
per student spending is up 2.5%?
I believe that's correct in my head right now. I'd like to sit down and work out the numbers.
2.5% since the last biennium, just say roughly.
Right.
And
since the last fiscal year, right.
Since the last fiscal year,
right.
2.5%, is that in real dollars, adjusted dollars?
That would be total. But I'm making some adjustments for how we shifted funds in and out of the general fund in that. So I'd have to sit down on a sheet of paper and work it all out to give you a real good answer to that.
Elpo wants to make a clarification. Yeah, I have a question again. Are you assuming then that the $4 million, the $7 million, and the $10 million all go through the formula?
No.
Part of your.
No.
Okay. You know.
No. I was just, you asked the question. I haven't worked those numbers out, so I just have to look at what runs I have. Okay. Somebody else has done and quote you those numbers. If you want a real adjusted number, exactly the
motion
on a comparable basis the way you want them, I'm going to have to sit down with a piece of paper and work it out and get it back.
Have you made it yet?
Are you asking a question?
I believe I made the motion. And if I didn't, my motion is to adopt the dash 2 under this bill.
Okay.
I just did it somehow. I didn't do it there. Madam Chair, I had a question for him.
Okay.
In addition to that. Well, just, and this is for Representative Winters, in a March 17th, 1999 memo to the Speaker, you outlined, in essence, the various funding levels, appropriations, I don't know what, but by then, who knows what distribution formula you're using, probably distribution one or two run, but just for the record, so you understand, I mean, maybe you missed when this Portland came, or we talked about Portland in committee here, at the governor's budget level, they were cutting about $55 million straight off the top, and they only get hold at around 5.1, at a 4.95, and again, they testified today that they've already reduced it to $10 million, and that's to survive under a 4.95. I guess the point here today is that two things are pretty clear. One, we don't know how this is being distributed. There's questions about that. This is the biggest school district in the state. We're spending, I mean, this budget, the school district's budget is probably would be one of the largest state budgets we would consider, which is largely dependent upon state appropriation. We're talking about a $700 million budget before us, and having them come in with uncertainty makes me extremely uncertain about why we're pushing this today. I can say, this is one big district versus some small ones. So I'm extremely troubled by, and this is, again, go back to my point. Jim is, in my mind, one of the most capable financial persons. He's been in this building. He knows what's going on as far as numbers. If he can't even describe what this is going to do to our school district, the biggest one in the state, I again come back to, we're not doing public service here today.
I don't mean to be vexatious, but this is an awful important issue.
I agree.
Zinni Edwards talks about the Portland district, and I guess rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the Corvallis district at 4811 is going to have substantial cuts, and I think Representative Ross is on the board. You can speak to that better than I can. I mean, speak about other districts, other school districts in my legislative district. The Dallas School District, I think, will be maybe all right, but certainly can't make improvements. The Central School District, which is Monmouth Independent, really will have to take cuts at 4811. And other districts, I think if you look at little schools like Perrydale and Fall City and some of those places, Perrydale's now on a four-day week already. The little school districts are in trouble. So this is not just the Portland problem, it's more than one.
Okay, Mayor Gordley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to go back to a question I posed earlier. We're fortunate that Mr. Scherzinger is here to try to help us understand the possible impact of 4.811 on Portland. And I say try because we still don't really have a good handle on that. But my earlier question was posed to members who served on the negotiating team. Did you all look at similar information such as been provided by Portland that we all have in front of us now? Did you look at information that would tell you what the impact would be on the various school districts around the state? Did you look at the information? Did you talk about the information? Did you talk about each school district so that we know what the full weight of our decision making is at that level, the negotiating level, but that we also know what it is as we sit here this afternoon? I'm asking the question because I think in order for our process to be, I'll say a legitimate one, we need to know what the impacts are on those various districts out there around the state. So those who sat on the negotiating team, your comments would be most helpful to me at this juncture.
I understand, Senator. I was not
I do. I understand that you were not.
You're looking at me, and I'm terrified. I didn't sit on the negotiating.
I understand. I'm really talking to Senator Dersler, Senator Schroeder, and President Adams. And I thank you for coming down in the timely.
Thank you. Just a comment in regards to this. To me, there's been no issue that's been more highly lobbied in this building in K-12 funding. And people have been on my case for 6 months, and I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm sure they have. We always have revenue come up with the formula, and we come up with the money. We're doing nothing irregular here, and that formula is now being developed. And we have, I'm sure, your schools or my schools are telling me what it is, the process. We're giving them a 10% increase in this overall in the revenue for K-12. And I'm not sure that's exactly correct, Madam Chair, but it's close to where we are. I say it's time to move ahead. To tell you the truth, sick of being lobbied on this issue. I made my mind up, and I hope others have made their mind up. We move ahead at 4811, and I'd like to see us do that today.
I just had a point of clarification in case I missed something, and that is, what does current service level mean? Is that where we started from the last biennium? I kept hearing cuts, and I'm trying to move from where we were the last time to where we are this time.
If you want to come up, Madam Chair and Representative Winters, current service level has a special meaning within the budgetary process at the state level, and I'll let Dave Fisher provide you with the details for the budget and its current service level.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winters, members of the subcommittee, I'm Dave Fazer from DAS Budget and Management. The construction of the current service level for K-12 schools followed a fairly specific methodology that is similar to constructing current service level for state agencies. We do that with known information or with information that can be best estimated. In the case of K-12 schools, we took the original budget of a legislatively approved budget of $4.35 billion, and we did remove $200 million of what we considered to be one-time funding under a current service level paradigm, and that being $150 million in lottery revenue bonding and $50 million of general fund that was given to the schools for one-time classroom costs. From the 4.15, we added 2% growth each year, and we added student growth on top of that. And then we also added an additional $83.5 million, if my memory serves me correctly, as a calculated number to help the schools overcome the added PERS costs due to the PERS increases. When you add all of those together, you get to the 4.378, and those were the actual considerations for construction of that number. What the schools have said in response to that number, and a lot of the arguments do hold true, that there are many things that are not taken into account in that number. The most important is that even though we put $83.5 million in there for PERS, the actual formula does not distribute those funds to the actual school districts based on their actual PERS increases. There are also program starts that school districts had begun this biennium that we did not take any into consideration to roll up because we don't have that information. And if there were any salary costs or collective bargaining costs over and above the 2+2, we would not have taken that into account either. And with that, I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
But the reality is that we've got a 10% increase, correct? About.
Representative Winters, I think that would be appropriate. I'm trying to think what number specifically you're looking at.
At the 10%.
Yes, that is correct.
Any other questions, Mr. Chairman?
Madam Chair, just to clarify, the PERS roll-up, which is an additional over what they had last time, was $83
million?
Mm-hmm. We're paying $83 million more for retirement systems.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Zirkle, that's our calculation of the additional dollars they would need to pay the PERS increase for their general fund budget salary PERS increases.
What was the overall PERS increase then?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Zirkle, we calculated they would need an additional 83.5.
Just our general fund.
Their general fund budget also includes some other expenditures that are not state general funded, but yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
President Ross?
Madam Chair, if we could have Frank Nightmare come forward, I think he could talk from COSA's point of view about the percentage of school districts that would have cuts at the 4-8 one more year.
Representative
Leonard. Thank you. Madam Chair, the PERS $18 million cost, how much of that is attributable to the bill we passed that increases the PERS retirement amount by the state tax? And then the local school districts pay a higher amount on that the state then gets the benefit of the tax, increased tax of, that isn't refunded back to PERS. I said that very clumsily, but you understand what I'm...
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, I believe the, if I'm hearing your question correctly, the 83.5 was specifically the result of the PERS rate increases, which PERS made, of which the majority consideration was the passage of the bill that you're referring to.
Correct.
But I wouldn't have the exact breakout because the 83.5 is calculated based on the percentage increases that PERS had passed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what percentage of that was considered as part of the bill, although I know it was the major portion.
But it's fair to say that the increased cost of the PERS system attributed to the bill that passed to deal with the issue of taxation and pension benefits is exactly equivalent to the revenue that the state receives in income tax revenue based on the tax of the PERS benefit.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, I don't believe that I could answer that question adequately. Perhaps the Legislative Revenue Office could.
Well, is it fair to say the State General Fund receives extra revenue in terms of income tax because now we tax PERS benefits, whereas before we didn't?
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, yes, conceptually, I wouldn't be able to address the specifics, though.
No, but we do. We receive taxes, income taxes on PERS retirements that we didn't receive prior to the passage of that bill in the 93 session, whatever it was.
Presumably so.
And none of that revenue has been then given back to the local school districts to offset their increased costs because of the increased benefit created by the 93 session.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, we could not tie those exact dollars being returned to school districts. That's correct.
Okay, we have a motion for it.
I thought we were going to go on to some other. I was just asking questions of him. I had a couple other points to make if we're going to vote on this. Yes. Uh-huh. I think it's very important that we consider adopting Representative Edwards' motion. I suspect the reason, I don't know this for sure, but I'm just inferring the reason Senator Nelson isn't here today and Senator Adams is here is based on a letter I have from the Pendleton School District that says even under the $4.95 billion budget, they will lose $226,500 from their operating budget in the Pendleton School District. Certainly under the budget, the 4811 budget, they will lose an additional $350,000, which would cause eliminating in the Pendleton School District 4 teachers, 5 to 7 educational aides, across-the-board budget reductions, initiating pay-for-play athletics, among other reductions. I think it's critical that we not concentrate this discussion on the Portland School District, as Senator Crow said. There are a number of districts across the state, north and south, east and west, including the Pendleton School District, that will be devastated by a $4.811 billion K-12 budget. It is unacceptable. We can sit here and attempt to catch budget analysts in constricted questions so that they answer the way we want them to our questions all we want. It doesn't change the fact that school districts are going to lay off teachers, that according to the Pendleton School District, I believe somewhere in here it says they have, it may not be the Pendleton School, I have another one from the Salem-Kaiser District, says they haven't bought books since the 90s. It's 1991, it could be Pendleton or Salem-Kaiser. But I think it's imperative that we reverse this trend and deal responsibly with funding K through 12 for students all across the state, not just Portland. So I would urge the members here to do what it is. Those of us who have sat on this subcommittee since January have heard this very loud and clear. To actually fully fund the schools would be beyond the $4.95 billion level. But the 4811 is irresponsible. The 495 that Representative Edwards proposes certainly is not pie in the sky. It is, in my opinion, the minimum we should be doing right now. So I'd urge all of us to join Representative Edwards in approving his amendments.
We have Representative Edwards. Representative
Ross, Senator Adams, Mary Carolyn, and Senator Burton.
Oh,
next. Next. And
Representative
Schwartz, come back to the House. Yeah. I guess this is to the motion, is that correct?
Come on.
Yeah. Well, colleagues, I think, again, you've heard this morning, or this afternoon, why I'm troubled first and foremost by this process sitting here today. We don't have adequate understanding of what this is going to do across the state. And I come back to that. That's just a disservice to the state. But nevertheless, we're going to sit here today and vote on, I think, an alternative, which we all should sit here and support. And I suggest looking at the Statesman Journal editorial recently that said this is the starting point, 495. I'm at least offering the ending point, and I would hope we could get to this ending point today, this afternoon. As the article says, the top priority is clear, providing 495 and state support for schools. The amount is more than Republican leadership supports, but it's reasonable and responsible. It's time for Republican and Democratic leaders to work with Governor Sitzhaber on a comprehensive budget that has strong bipartisan support at all levels of the Capitol. They should start with 495. I think that summarizes it extremely well. I actually saved this from a few years ago, the education session, and there's Senator Adams on there, and then Speaker Lynn Lundquist, kind of yellowed over the time here, but again, at that point, and the neat piece here was the title is, in this case, the 69th Legislative Assembly has a tough job, but adequate provisions for schools and colleges rates top billing. Well, we just did higher ed, so now it's time to do K-12. And again, in this editorial, we hope this ends up being regarded instead as the education session. And again, what I see is going down the path again is underfunding schools. We, again, heard hours and hours and hours of testimony, compassionate testimony from parents, business folks. The Portland Chamber has sent out a letter saying 495 was an adequate amount of money. I have that here before you. You can look at who signed off on this. It's a who's who in Oregon. And these are bipartisan who in the state, leaders in the state. And I just, mm-hmm. I've been reading too many Dr. Seuss books, perhaps. Oh, well, I do have a a 6, a 5, and a 15-month-old. it does happen.
It's showing us.
You're reading it right now, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do feel that this is the appropriate amount for us this session, and I would direct your attention to an editorial by the Oregonian dated May 16, 1999, where they laid out how we could easily get to 4.95. We in the chamber had an opportunity to vote. We did vote in the House, came close to actually supporting an alternative to how we might use the tobacco money. I still hope that isn't dead in this building, because we do have the resources. We can't walk out of here and say we didn't, quite frankly, Madam Chair. And that is what's the most troubling piece for me as a parent, as somebody who's worked closely with both advocates, with Democrats, Republicans. I put in the first bill in the session to put the marker out, which was $5.1 billion. To me, that's perhaps the best number. But again, 4.95, I believe, is a compromise. We've come down. And I just feel very, very strongly that if we're going to send the strongest message possible this afternoon to the children of this state and to the 55-plus thousand in my district who attend public schools, doing anything less than 4.95 is a disservice to them and the children and the future of the state. So I do urge you to adopt this afternoon.
Thank you. I would be very because I agree with Senator Kim because everybody's made up their mind on this. And I appreciate however the opportunity to say that while my district is important in Corvallis, we'll suffer cuts at the 4.811 level. I think the biggest tragedy of the underfunding of schools will come in Portland because our big city school system is important to the health of the entire state. And if we were able to adopt this motion and fund it 4.95, then that would be enough. But if we don't, then we're going to have to find some other mechanism to support Portland because it's so important that we not allow our Portland public school system to go down the drain. If we do, then we move toward the concentration of crime and poverty, that undereducation of a city, urban, crowded population, diverse population comes with. We initiate the flight of the middle and upper class to private schools. We have a two-tier education system that in the long run creates the kind of urban blight that then we have to pay for in another way, and the state has to pick up a big part of that tab. The biggest prevention we could do in terms of preventing future crime, population in our prisons, future costs, is to maintain the quality of our Portland school system. This has been a wonderful school system. Through Matt Prophet, through many years, we've had the privilege of having a fine big city school system. Portland is growing. It's the size where it's very difficult to maintain that. And I think it would be a tragedy for this state to turn its back on Portland and somehow get into a, well, we're not really responsible. It's somehow those guys that are responsible. This is a big issue for us, and I think that as leaders in the state, it's our responsibility to look at this and say, we are responsible, and we need to take responsibility for solving this problem.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification on the comments that Representative Leonard made. I want to be very clear that what I heard him explain as the reason Senator Nelson is not here is not what I heard directly from Senator Nelson. Senator Nelson was prepared to be here today to support this budget at 4811. And if he were here, he would do so. But he did have commitments, and I think actually commitment to getting this farm version as the reason for not being here today.
I could just clarify. I did say I inferred, and I didn't know for sure, but assumed. So.
And Madam Chair, all I'm doing is trying to provide clarification because I do know, because I did talk to Senator Nelson.
Well, he shouldn't vote for this budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even at 4.95, according to the Coalition for School Funding Now, there are 31 school districts in the state that would suffer service cuts. That's even at 4.95. so that when we get below that number, again, we're talking about the harm, not potential harm, but the real harm in the classroom around the state. And that's what gives me not only pause, but it gives me great concern about the way in which we are leading into the future with regard to education and the quality of education that we are willing to support for all students in this state. In fact, I'm beginning to think that we are comfortable allowing our students in K-12 to march backwards into the next century. I'm not comfortable with that, but that seems to be the collective decision that we are that we are moving toward. Again, there are 31 school districts out there that would be heard at 4.95, and some of those include Arlington and Corvallis, Burns, Lake Oswego, Pilot Rock, Ethel, Lincoln City, Tillamook, Central, Curry, Hermiston, Mapleton, Rainier, Union, Central Wren, John Day. In fact, in John Day, they're on a four-day school, right? Monument, Sheridan, and on down the line. I'm deeply concerned about that, to say the least. It's not just about Portland. It's about the future of the state, how we're preparing our students to meet that future. And I think there's another issue that's also been raised. You talk about Portland and how some have said, you know, how goes Portland, so goes the rest of the state. And my concern at some point would be how our funding of education impacts our bond, our bond rating. That's not a conversation we've had in this committee that I can recall with our state treasurer, for example. Mm-hmm. At some point, there is an impact on the state's bond rating when we don't adequately fund education. Just something to think about.
Well, you know, I find it interesting listening to this discussion. It would sound like the only problems that we have in school is money. There are other answers to the problems in the schools other than money, and I think there are other ways of correcting the problems that we have other than just more money. And I think that it's important that we perhaps take a look at some of the other reasons why we have a problem with education. The other thing that concerns me, and Abel talked a little about the future, in my understanding from Legislative Fiscal, with the budget that we presently are proposing, we're going to come back next session with a $450 million shortfall. And if you think this is going to be a tough budget to pass, wait till next session when you have to try to cut another $450 million out of state spending. So I think looking at the future, I don't think it's prudent for this legislative group just to consider this biennium. I think that you have to also take a look at the future. At least anyone in business is not going to just worry about today's what you're spending today. You have to look at what the resources are going to be next time, and can you continue business? And I think we're very short-sighted when we don't think about those things. I don't think, at least from my viewpoint, that the citizens of the state are going to be willing to get more dollars next time than any more than they are this time. And if the polls that I read, people feel that, yeah, schools need more money, but you ask the question, would you be willing to give us more of your earnings for schools? And the answer is no. And if you put a tax increase out on the ballot, I could pretty much tell you that it's not going to pass. Passing this kind of a budget this time is easier than compared to what we're going to have to look at next time. And you have to figure out how to get another $450 million out of the budget. So just a comment.
Money is certainly not the only solution to our problems, no question about that. Some of us served on the Substantive Committee on Education with Senator Hartung. Senator Hartung, I wish he could be here today, and if we put this off until Monday, perhaps he could be here. Senator Hartung does believe that the 495 number is an essential number. At least that's what I've heard him say, and when Senator Randy Miller was on our committee as well, he too was supporting that number, as I recall. And it's too bad that those folks can't be here. And that number doesn't solve all problems. If you were with Senator Hartung on his committee during the interim, we had people come and tell us about the importance of the reform measures succeeding and in what the kind of investment we ought to be making in our schools to make that reform movement succeed. The teacher training you needed, the counseling you needed, the associated other costs that are certainly not in this budget that were needed to make the kind of investment we've been making in trying to improve our schools. So it's just not there. 495 doesn't get us there either, but 495 is certainly better than 4811. I'm really sorry that we can't make this what Senator Hartung was convinced would be the education session, and that we would fund the public schools at a level that would make them viable. We're not doing that. Mr. President, I remember when somebody came from Josephine County to one of our night meetings and talked about the Josephine County schools and the kind of cuts they're going to have to make if they don't get adequately funded. Maybe that's been resolved. I didn't hear them mentioned in the list that Senator Gordley read, but I know from other years that Josephine County has suffered immensely in terms of adequate funding. Getting levies passed there has been almost important. Local option won't solve their problem.
Thank you. Madam Chair. This is a very difficult day for me in a lot of ways because perhaps along with Representative Edwards, I very early signed on to the coalition figure of $5.1 billion, and $4.95 has been my goal, my target for a lot of times, for a long time, and with a lot of emails and conversations and that sort of thing. It's very hard for me to say, though, that at this point in the session, I don't know that 495 is realistic. Even the governor has come off 495 and is saying 489. The negotiations, of course, are going on. And so that being realistic is one thing. I've talked to a lot of people on both sides of the both the House and the Senate, and they kind of confirmed the same thing. So when I came in today, I was prepared to vote for 4811, and then I talked to actually Representative Edwards talked to me, and as a courtesy, let me know that he was going to introduce this amendment. And so after he left, I closed the door and, as usual, did some more thinking. But the bottom line for me is I came in today with that commitment, and I made that promise to the chair that I would vote for 4811. I'm going to have to keep my promise. It's very difficult. If I can look myself in the mirror when I brush my teeth, if I gave my commitment, I'm going to honor it today. And so very reluctantly, Representative Edwards and others, I'm a 4811 today.
Before we do that, I mean, this is an important vote. We were looking for Ozzy Rose. I was wondering if we could hear.
We need to proceed because I know I needed another.
Okay.
So if we could just go ahead and proceed.
Would it be possible then to have Representative Edwards, because I really haven't had time to go through his dash one, meant to briefly explain what it does?
Dash
two amendment.
I can be brief.
Very good.
And then just put that in.
A lot of the things may not
have. Please, we got to go.
Here. Very brief.
If you just look at section one, page two, I really paralleled a lot of what the original bill was. The difference between what the proposed bill at 4811 and what this bill does, the differences in section one, 2.2 versus 2.1 billion, section 2, 2.3 versus 2.17 billion. Section 3 is the same, 100 million. This is the school improvement fund that the governor had offered up early in his original budget. Section 3A is the 20 million, which actually was, unfortunately took it out of ODOT's budget for the distressed school fund. And I think the important piece about Section 3 largely was that it was going to get you to address some of the improvements that need to happen to get a system in CAM. Everything else, Section 4, Section 5 are nearly the same. And I just, so that you understand what this budget does mechanically versus what the other, the difference isn't large, a little more targeted perhaps in some of the purpose, but again, I suggest that this is a better way to go in this section.
Clerk Caldwell. Is on adopting 495 number, amending the statute, eight amendments.
Senator
Burke?
No.
Senator
Kim?
No.
Senator
Gordon?
Aye.
Representative
Nevin?
No.
Representative
Ross? Aye.
Representative
Aye.
No.
No.
No. No. Motion failed.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5018 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
I amend that motion. We need to adopt the full recommendation. First.
Madam Chair, I amend that to adopt that referral recommendation first.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves that we adopt the LFO recommendation into House Bill 5018 and it's due pass to the full committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Blaine.
I would like to move dash three amendments to amend the motion to establish actually, Representative Wilson's motion as the current service level for the beginning of the next item.
Let's vote on Representative Wilson. Do you want to amend the motion?
That would not be appropriate. And then my amendment to his motion.
Is your amendment, Representative Wilson?
Is the Dashery amendment.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, if I could
briefly
ask my administrative assistant, Representative Edwards, to explain the technical aspect of this motion.
My secretary. He answered my phone, yeah. I don't know whose role, too. Just briefly, colleagues, the Dash 3 is basically, in my mind, trying to make a bad bill better, which is that by next session, this will be the beginning point for the discussion for next session. That is, you won't allow any roll down after 4811, and it will allow the appropriation that is voted out of here, assuming it's that number today, will become the base budget for the next session. And I think that's something that I believe Senator Durkin was addressing, which is every time, and what happened this session, which you heard from DAS, we start out with one-time money. There's a lot of one-time money suggested in this budget. We would drop back down to a much lower current service level, and what this would do is ensure that we don't drop back down. It keeps us at a higher level, and therefore, for the next biennium, we start out at the appropriate level of funding, and schools will at least know where they start out. That's it.
The one thing LFO staff said, the only problem with this is that the fluctuation in student enrollment could make this a problem. Mm-hmm.
I think, just to that, I actually talked to John Yunker, who suggested that we had to do this statutorily in order for this to take place. They couldn't do it without statutory direction.
Clerk, can you call the roll on the desk?
Madam Chair, could I we are this time using lottery balls, $100 million
the lottery. Some lottery cost to be $150 million if 62 doesn't pass. And we are limited on the amount of dollars we can get through bonding. And so I'm not going to vote for this particular amendment. Again, coming back with a shortfall projected to be $450 million, including a 12% growth in the state's growth, I don't think it would be a very prudent decision to make this time.
All right, call the roll.
Oh, did you call my
name? Yeah.
Me. Hating to hear it, and I didn't hear it. Hi.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
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 Just one more. Let's see how far we can push it before we lose it.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. No.
No.
No. No. Motion failed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
I move LFO recommendation regarding House Bill 5018.
Representative Wilson moves House Bill 5018 with LFO recommendations to pass the full committee. Do I dare ask for discussion? Let's just vote on the bill. Clerk, call the bill.
Senator Johnson, no.
I know the correct answer this time, yes.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
No.
No. Yes.
Yes. Hi. Motion carries. Thank you. Good afternoon first.
Come on, let's start at 10.